Hey friends, I want to thank our sponsor, Raygun. Are you struggling to replicate the bugs and performance issues that your customers are reporting? Plug Raygun into your web and mobile applications right now and diagnose problems in minutes rather than hours. Kiss goodbye having to dig through log files and relying on frustrated users to report issues. Make your software development life so much easier using Raygun's error, crash, and performance monitoring tools. Every software team can create flawless software experiences for their customers with Raygun. Try it free today at raygun.com. That's R-A-Y-G-U-N.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Dr. Anika Simmons. She's a professor at Sam Houston State University and does work in teamwork and leadership and organizational behavior. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for chatting with me today. You did a very well-received talk at a conference called the Lead Dev Conference. Is this a conference for lead developers?
Absolutely, yes.
And you did this in conjunction with your husband, who is in tech. And I've actually had Anwan on the show years ago, so it's kind of fun to have the other side of the team here. And Anwan was telling me earlier that you all are in what we jokingly call a mixed marriage.
Exactly.
My wife and I are in a mixed marriage, but when we say mixed, we mean geeks and tech people and normal people. Are you the geek or are you the normal person?
Well, I think I'm the normal person, but yeah, I'm an academic, and we do have some overlaps, but Anwan definitely loves technology at a whole different level.
So he probably reboots the router. That's basically
Absolutely.
His job in the
That's
house.
His job, yes.
So what is your PhD in?
You know what? I have a PhD in management from Texas A&M in College Station. I am an Aggie, and I studied organizational behavior specifically.
Interesting. So it's so fun for me as a techie when I think of I call them the hard skills, and we shouldn't say hard skills or soft skills, but things, code compiles and it either errors or it doesn't. And that's very, very measurable to me. And when I think about academics and management and leadership, it feels soft in the sense of humans are complicated and squishy, but there's real data behind human behavior, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, and in some ways, people consider this, the things that we study in organizational behavior or organizational psychology are concepts that are abstract, but absolutely, mm-hmm. We do studies, qualitative studies, quantitative studies, and we look for statistical significance that can definitely justify and show patterns and correlations in human behavior.
Okay, so this means that this isn't just opinion. This isn't a bunch of people
oh, no,
in academia
not.
Up on a ivory tower saying, yeah, we pretty much figure
oh, no.
people think like this.
No, absolutely. No, there's data to support these concepts and these theories that we're investigating for sure.
Mm-hmm. And the talk that you all did was called Managing the Burnout Burndown.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know about burndown charts. I know that I can set up a schedule and I can set up a project and burn it, you know, burn down to a moment. How are you applying burnout to burn down?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So basically, as you said, I'm in a mixed marriage. And so when Anwan and I were talking about burnout and how we struggle to not get to that place, he mm-hmm. started explaining to me about the burnout chart, like you just said. And basically, as we discussed it, we realized, oh my goodness, this really could be used as a framework for this type of phenomenon that people are experiencing. And we can use it to kind of help explain some things that are very apparent in our culture today.
Okay. So what is that framework? How do you think about tech burnout?
Well, basically what happens is we have these charts, and I know Anwan always talks about there's this optimal line in this chart, and I may not be using the proper term, but he wants to always stay below that so he can make sure that he's on schedule, he's on time, mm-hmm. he's on budget. And what happens is with burnout is that people focus on that, and it becomes overwhelming, and it's something that begins to seep into your life, and then it can overtake you and have a lot of negative consequences.
Yeah. When I think about burn down charts in the context of a project, I think about landing an airplane.
Okay.
But when I think about burnout and I think about it in the context of a burn down chart, I think about maybe crashing the airplane if I don't maintain altitude.
All right. Right. Absolutely. And what happens is, you know, human beings, I mean, your biggest asset is your health, your personhood. And a lot of times we can get so engaged in the work that we're doing that we don't actually manage our person, who we are, our humanity, our health, our balance, our mind, and we can burn out and we can crash just like an airplane can.
Yeah. And I think that to my point about how I kind of, you know, inappropriately called things hard skills and soft skills is that computer people and tech people, myself included, tend to depersonalize our person-ness and think that we are just compilers that happen to be, you know, made of flesh and bone. And we're not computers. We simply can't behave like that. You know, it doesn't scale.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you use the term depersonalization, because I am an academic. So just to make sure we're all on the same page, mm-hmm. there are three dimensions of burnout. And one of them is emotional exhaustion. And when mm-hmm. we talk about burnout, it's something that's chronic that you feel like you can't come out of. And the second component that relates to what you just said is depersonalization. Mm-hmm. And what happens is when you are burned out, you do lose the personhood of people that you're working with. So an example that we like to use is if you went to a nurse's office or to a doctor's office, an appointment, and you said, "Oh, I'm here to see my friend," and they're like, "Oh, well, the broken leg is in room two." Well, basically, you've completely dehumanized that person, and it's just a person or an object that needs to be fixed. And when you get to a level of depersonalization in other people or even in yourself, mm-hmm. that could mean that there's a detachment that's happening there, and you could be overwhelmed. So you're just focusing on, lasering in on what you can do, because you realize that, oh my God, I'm just spent. I have nothing else to give. I can only focus on the essentials here. And sometimes humanity and personhood gets lost in that.
Do you think that that's something that is worse or exacerbated by the personalities and the work that we do in tech? It seems like we refer sometimes to tech workers as resources, and things become depersonalized well before burnout. Like, they become culturally depersonalized, which might mean that tech workers are more likely to burn out.
You know what? You know, that's a great question. And one of the things that Edwin and I discovered when we were doing research here is that some groups that tend to be more likely to be burned out are those that are engaged. And to be a person who works in tech, you have to really, really be engaged in your work. And hopefully you love it. And most of the times you do. And you would think that some research or previous research said, well, maybe engagement is the antonym to burnout. But no, what we really found out is that people that are really, really engaged are the ones that are most susceptible to burnout. So you're saying, is it cultural? Absolutely. It be cultural, because in order for you to be a great developer, to be a great programmer, to be a great mm-hmm. coder, you have to really be involved. And that involvement that takes you in and sucks you in could be the same thing that could lead you down the road of burnout.
Oh, interesting. That is kind of it's funny how these things are counterintuitive. Like, if I give too much, if I am too empathetic, that's in fact what I am doing. I'm giving a resource, a finite resource. So What is that? You say giving of yourself. There's no real word for one's emotional resource.
Well, I mean, I think Anne mentioned to you that I also study creativity. And to be creative, there are three components. You have to have domain skills, you have to have creativity skills, and one of them is intrinsic motivation. So if you were to ask me, what is it that I'm giving? It's that intrinsic motivation, meaning that I'm not doing this for a reward. I'm not doing this for a promotion. I'm not doing this to impress anyone. I actually do love this. And that's a good thing. And when you think about it, I don't know if you love music or not, but I know I do. You know how a lot of times people say, oh man, that first album by that artist was excellent, but that second album, I don't know what happened. And what it happens is that when you're intrinsically motivated, you're not distracted about anything external to you. So that first album from artists, they just give their all, not caring about anything. But that second album, a lot of times now you have, you know, your boss and your manager and the record company saying, oh, we got to do this. And you made 10 million here. Now we need to make 20 million there. Mm-hmm. Those external forces come in, and then that takes away from that laser focus and your ability to kind of hone in on what you love. So if you ask me, what is that intangible thing that can mm-hmm. sometimes get out of control. Intrinsic motivation is a good thing, but if you take it too far and you can never disconnect or turn off, it can become something destructive in your life.
That I really like that term. I am going to use that. That is exactly what it is. There is a tank of motivation. There's also been papers and some recent articles about the idea of willpower is a finite resource. And oftentimes people will say to either a depressed person or a person who has an issue that they're trying to work through, maybe they're trying to lose weight or get fit, and they say, well, just do it. Just do it, right? This is like one of the most iconic marketing terms of all time, just do it, which is really saying, ignore that this is a finite resource and simply push through. That is a problematic statement. That is ignoring that the gas tank is on E, keep driving.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one thing that we like to talk about is that to be successful, you do have to have balance. And one of those things is to mm-hmm. Interrogate reality. And if a lot of times we're so busy, I can just think about when I was getting my dissertation and I had to write the papers and I had deadlines and all this stuff going on. I didn't even realize if I had a headache or I didn't realize if I was tired. I would look up and it would be midnight and all this time went by. Well, I loved what I was doing and I was completely engaged. But what was happening is I was losing touch with the core of who I am. And in some ways, I created my best work, but it also took a toll on my body as well.
It's interesting that you bring up the idea that you were doing your best work, you were enjoying yourself, but you didn't notice that the tank was becoming depleted. I think that we think about burnout as something that people would notice, but you kind of just implied that it can sneak up on you.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the solutions that Anne-One and I like to talk about is that one of the ways that you can manage the burndown is relationships. So partners, and it could be a friend, it could be a spouse, it could be a team member. And I know for me, everyone can tell my husband, Anika, maybe we need to take a break here, or maybe we should go for a walk or something like that. So yes, because we are engaged people and we're highly capable, mm-hmm. there is an opportunity for us to lose touch, and we may need others who care about us to kind of step in and provide some possible solutions or possible outlets for us to kind of disengage, kind of regroup, fill that tank back up, and then dive back in.
Indeed, right. And not everyone necessarily has those close connections. Not everyone has a partner. So you have to ask yourself, look inside yourself and say, am I an introvert? Am I an extrovert? Am I someone who goes, where do I go for my energy? Is it video games? Is it a support group? Is it simply going outside and walking in the sunshine? But catching yourself, and I've done it before, I think we all have coders, of catching yourself after 6 hours and not moving in front of the computer, and you go like, oh, what have I just done?
Time
has just teleported me into the future and I'm hurting. Right. I need to stop.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with what you said. And another book that we've discussed, and one of them is a book called Quiet. And you're correct that introverts do require sometimes quiet time to kind of rebuild and energize. And we're in another mixed marriage and that I'm an extrovert. So when I get down or what have you, I want to go to, a gathering or to some kind of park and go and meet new people and talk mm-hmm. and do those types of things. So yes, you're absolutely right. Regardless of what the situation is, you have to know yourself, spend some time and do the things that work for you. If it is video games, if it's reading a book, if it's going a walk, whatever it is, we have to try to make sure that we stay balanced and connected with where we are so things mm-hmm. don't just overtake us out of nowhere.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I'm hearing in everything that you're talking about is this idea of an introspective analysis. It's funny that we analyze code, we analyze problems all the time, and we schedule meetings to analyze problems. But I don't know how often coders sit down and put a one-hour meeting on the calendar that says, analyze myself, look inside myself, and really just sit there and ask myself the question, what do I need to refill this tank so I don't burn out?
Yeah. And I think what you mentioned earlier about culture, I think that it's a cultural thing. And I used to be a consultant. I used to work for Accenture and I used to work for Capgemini, Ernst & Young as well. And I think that if companies put a priority on helping their employees pursue wellness, then that would trickle down. Leadership starts at the top. So if you have a company that says, oh, okay, we need to do yoga, or let's schedule some yoga and we'll have this team or this group from 2 to 3, we'll do that. Or, you know, some countries, they spend time in Asian nations, you know, stretching or what have you before work. Mm-hmm. And so it's a mentality. It's a mentality. Mm-hmm. And we do have a situation where many of us live in the States and we have a Protestant work ethic where the work itself is valuable, and it makes us feel important and that we have meaning and dignity. And if we're not working, a lot of people feel like, well, I'm not contributing to anything. So I'm just here. But sometimes the best thing that you can do for yourself is go take a nap. But that's not a concept that is really, in my opinion, or in my experience and in my reading, addressed or discussed or implemented in a real way in the organizations that we're working in these days.
That's really significant. A lot of people who listen to this podcast are not in the U.S. or not in Western countries. So if you're listening to this show, be empathetic and think about how every country is different, every culture is different. And you just brought up something really interesting that you and I, as Americans, have, for better or worse, been brought up with this idea that the work itself is supposed to recharge me. And we have this sense of guilt that we're not even supposed to take vacation. How many people do we know who have lost vacation hours because they've filled up their bucket of vacation hours and then forfeited them at the end of the year? Everyone I know has done that at some point or another in America, while it seems like other nations are culturally more comfortable with taking vacation unapologetically.
Absolutely. And a lot of times it's almost like a little bit of a battle or a badge of honor of, oh, I haven't taken any vacation, or I've been here since 5 in the morning. Mm. And what we have to realize is that, you know, that's only something that you can do for so long. That's a short term plan, because you need your best self so you can be the best coder and really see those nuances and have vision for where we're going with this project. Mm-hmm. And if I'm burned out, I really don't have the resources to do that. So it's kind of a change of the way that we're looking at things. I know that there's some articles out there where people say, you know, I rebelled and I left work at 5, where leaving work at 5 was like a rebellious thing to do. Mm-hmm. So we really have to kind of think about this and look at it from a long-term view. If you want your people to be, you know, the most productive, and the terms that I always think of is people to be, you want them to be the most efficient and effective they can be, we have to also look at the wellness of the employees and the organizations in which they work.
Hey friends, summer's longer days and slower pace invite us to pick up a book, follow our questions, and try our hand at something new. The work of modern software developers is evolving in ways that are both challenging and rewarding. As a developer, it's essential that you cultivate a security mindset. And to help, we've put together a collection of information security books, podcasts, blogs, and hands-on exercises recommended by VeraCoders across our development, security, and product teams. From a just-published page-turner to classic FRAC articles, there's something here for everyone who's interested in becoming more security-minded. So dip your toes in or take a deep dive. Visit www.veracode, that's veracode.com/reading. That's veracode.com/reading. In your talk at Lead Dev New York, you have a slide that says the wrath of workism. I have never heard that word, workism.
Mm-hmm. Well, workism is correlated in some way with the Protestant work ethic. And what that really is talking about is, again, that the value of my humanity is tied to my work, meaning that if things are not going well at my work, then they're not going well in my personal life. There is a relationship, a tangible relationship there. And what happens is things at work sometimes occur that are not the best, and it has nothing to do with me. You know, the economy might take a hit, or maybe a piece of software that we're working with may not do what we want it to do, but that had nothing to do with me. But since I'm so correlated and tied into it, it touches who I am, and I feel less than because my work is taking a hit.
Mm-hmm. And this causes physical, not just, this isn't just mental, like you can physically break your body. You can burning down illness, like you can become ill physically and exacerbate underlying conditions.
Yeah, unfortunately, we live in a very stressed out society, and a lot of people and a lot of research will suggest it has something to do with, number one, it's really a struggle for people to have work-life balance. So if I'm doing well at work, I'm not doing well at home, or if I'm doing well at home, I'm not doing well at work. And the quick example is that I'll ask anyone sometimes, oh, well, maybe you can come home early. Well, he may come home early and I'll be happy, but his boss may not be happy because he is not finishing something that needed to be finished. Or his boss had 8 feet to work late. Well, then the boss is happy, but then me and the kids aren't happy. So it's this constant war that a lot of people live under. In terms of illness, stress is the root cause of a lot of illnesses. People are dealing with all types of challenges, and decreasing stress can help provide health for your body, because the stress is something that is latent. I know for me, when I was getting my dissertation and I was working really, really hard, I started grinding my teeth, Scott, and I didn't even know that it was happening. And then I woke up and finally my jaw was hurting, and I went to the dentist, and that's what was happening. And it was stress, and it was stress that I didn't even know that I was experiencing. Cause once again, I was doing what I loved. I was up all night. I was engaged, and I was you know, firing on all cylinders, but it took a toll on my body over time.
My goodness. That sounds like there's also a leadership issue there, where a leader needs to be able to help their team with burnout, but they might be burned out themselves. So then it's a vicious cycle.
Absolutely. And again, this it's all about the tone. It's the tone. It's the tone at the top on we value, we appreciate our people. We want people to live balanced lives. Or you could work somewhere where your boss is, all they care about is the work. And you're just like you talked about at the very beginning. You know, you're just a cog. You're just a piece in a manufacturing system here. You know, humanity is completely removed. So the tone, the culture is very powerful and plays a huge role in this situation.
So when you're trying to make an effective team, an efficient team, and you're trying to inspire people and fuel them, where, you know, I have found myself that a leader who can give a good pep talk, a pep talk from my boss can really get me going for a couple of months, which is amazing. Like a 20-minute conversation about what we're doing here at the organization can fuel me for a few months. And that's really significant. But at the same time, if a boss is like, hey, just take the weekend, whatever you need to do, that could also breed negative behaviors where, without using, I don't know if lazy is a bad word, but you could imply that the work doesn't matter at all. Therefore, people could start being abusive with a program of, oh, there's unlimited vacation, take the time you need, just get the work done. How do you balance that getting stuff done with not burning out?
Yeah, well, I also, you know, have a PhD in human resources. They come together. And I would say the solution to that is how you bring people on. I mean, we want to bring on the best people, right? So we you know, interview people, we fly people in, we make sure that there's a connection that, and really that there's a passion for what people are doing when you bring them on. And if you have people like that, I think you're going to be hard pressed to find people that want to, you know, what do they say? The mice will play when the cat's away. I think there's a Theory X out there, and Theory X is really a leadership style that's command and control. And they kind of believe that way. But a Theory Y leadership approach is basically where I want to empower people. And I feel like people are creative and they're innovative and they want to do good work. So that comment will be taken completely different depending on the type of person that you hire. So what's the solution? You hire the best people, the people who will have the skills, that are engaged, that are passionate, and they will not want to take advantage of any situation where they feel like they're taking time off. They're really genuinely going to take that time off to refill that tank that we're talking about, and then continue to, you know, dive back in and do the work that they need to do.
So it sounds like the leader really needs to think about the behaviors that they are modeling as well. And if your boss looks and exudes burnout and stressed out, if they're sending emails to you at 2 a.m. on a Friday night, then they're not, you know, it's one of those do as I say, not as I do type of situations. And the organization will notice that.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. We get our cues from the top. No doubt about it.
Okay. So that implies that if you are But if you're being compassionate, you're not trying to say, I'm letting you off the hook or I'm being lazy as an organization. We are literally creating a psychologically safe place for the workers.
Yeah. And there's a construct in organizational behavior that is entitled psychological safety, what you just said. And basically, if I work somewhere and things aren't going well and I feel concerned about communicating that, that is a sign that either there's not a good fit here or we need to have a conversation or something needs to happen to alter that, because I should be able to bring my full self to work and contribute and be a part of the team.
That's really significant. And I know that sometimes, in, at least in the Western culture, we try to get around the idea of I want to have a psychologically safe workplace with this idea of the open door policy, which implies that anyone at any level can just wander into a boss's office and say, hey, I have a problem, which sounds great on its face, but itself can be a stressor because then you feel like you only got so many of those. I don't want to be high maintenance. It's like a get out of jail free card. Like, how many times can I really wander into the CEO's office? I don't email Satya at Microsoft every 20 minutes because, you know, we're out of free soda pop. So them saying I have a open door policy itself stresses me out.
Right. Absolutely. I understand what you're saying. And what I hear you talking about is the fact that in many organizations, we have a hierarchy. So smaller organizations in mm-hmm. terms of structure are flat. So if we were a startup, you may mm-hmm. not feel that anxiety, or anyone may not feel the anxiety about going down to the boss's office, just five of us here or 10 of us, what have you. Mm-hmm. But as organizations grow, we tend to establish hierarchy. Human beings establish hierarchy in anything. There's a hierarchy. I'm on the PTO board. There's a hierarchy there. Mm. So the thing about that is, when you do have an open door policy, we do self-assess and say, is this a meaningful thing to say or what have you? But what we have to do is decide, you know what, this is something that's key. This is something that I really need to discuss. Of course, we don't want to go in with little things here and there. But if it's something that is really touching you or something that's on your mind, I think that having that open door policy and utilizing it when you need it is an important thing. And your boss or your managers, many times they want to hear from you. I know for me, mm-hmm. I go in and I talk to my chair when things are on my mind, and I don't bug him all the time. But if there's something going on, and generally when you have a healthy boss or a healthy relationship, they're pleased to see you and they want to hear what you have to say.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let me ask a hard question then, because I think this is one that everyone's thinking, but no one actually wants to say out loud.
Okay.
When is it appropriate to quit to get away from burnout?
That is really a real question, because, you know, life is short, in my opinion, if you ask me. And I believe that if you should do what you love and the money will follow. That's another one of my philosophies. And the thing about it is, I understand we have mortgages and we have bills and we do have to live. But after you've tried to develop your internal network, after you've spent time making sure that you're building relationships and going to, you know, different events in your area and your field of study, you've mm-hmm. tried to you know, have yoga on campus, you've read books, you've meditated, you've done all these things, and you're still stressed out, you're still not sleeping well, you're still grinding your teeth or what have you. Sometimes you do have to pull yourself out of the situation. Hopefully after, you know, saving some money and really having some nice fillers out there. But there is a point, if you ask me, there is a point where my health, because to me, health is wealth. And if my health is taking such a strong hit, then there may be an opportunity or a time for me to maybe do something different than what I'm currently doing if it's becoming too much. But again, organizations should want their people to be healthy, because mm-hmm. a healthy employee is going to be doing healthy work. They're going to be, you know, providing healthy code. They're going to be a healthy team member. So it's not a negative thing. So it's that reframing of work mm-hmm. and wellness and balance that we need to be having a discussion about in organizations.
Indeed. And it seems like if a good reason to leave would be if that is not respected as a value, if humans themselves and their humanity is not respected as an organization, then if you are not enabled to fix that because you're not at the top, that's a good reason to pull the ripcord.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Changing your working environment, I think, can be really overwhelming for someone. And not everyone has that luxury. Not everyone has that privilege to be able to go and quit. That can be a very, very stressful time.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
So I'm hearing that you shouldn't be too hard on yourself. it is not like burning out is not a personal failing, though. Like everyone burns out. This is not a thing where you just take a nap and everything's fine. You really have to look inside yourself.
Yeah. Again, I know I'm giving a lot of my little statements here, but I allow myself to be human. That's the thing. And if I am feeling tired, I'm tired. And if I feel like I'm giving my all, I've given my all. And I know that. And I can't let anyone make me feel small or that I am not, you know, a respected person because I need to take a nap or take a vacation or, you know, have a break or what have you. So yes, we want to allow ourselves to be human and really build that relationship with your boss as much as you can or with your team as much as you can so that they can see you as a person and not just a, you know, output or, you know, a contributor, but an actual human being behind the work. I think that's really important.
Yeah, that one has been interesting. I've watched people on different teams, at least at Microsoft and IBM and big companies that I've worked with, where some folks come to work, like you said, extroverts go out to get their energy. They come to work and they get energy from genuine work friendships, while other people say, I didn't come to work to make friendships. That's also cultural. Some people go to work, meet friends and have barbecues with them afterwards, while others say, I want to get the work done and I'm not interested in being your friend.
Absolutely. And what that is you have to have healthy boundaries that work for you. That definitely that work for some people is a place to socialize and really have friends that even become family. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what it is you have to make sure that or we have to make sure that we get involved in a situation that works for us. Because for a person that wants that healthy boundary and you try to keep pulling them in to be like family, well, then that becomes stressful for them. So really, it's just about respecting people and their personal principles and values. I mean, everyone's different. We have to respect where people are coming from. We're here to do the job. And if you want more, then go for it. If you need that healthy boundary, then that's okay, too.
You know, that really hit me for a second there because I have worked at companies where someone was like, we're all a family. And I'm just like, you know, I don't want to be like, I like y'all, but I'm not your family.
Right, right. Exactly.
My family's at home and you're keeping me from them.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Anika Simmons, for talking to me about managing the burnout burndown.
Oh, it's been my honor. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Fantastic. I'm going to have links to everything in the show notes, and you can watch Anwan and Dr. Anika Simmons talk about managing burnout at Lead Dev New York. It's the full video of their talk. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.